Welcome to Peopling with Purpose, a podcast dedicated to helping companies manage staffing and HR. Each week, we'll offer insights to simplify your HR processes and discuss challenges people face to help you find, retain, and engage the best talent. We're your hosts from PR Companies. I'm Mary Beth Meadows.
And I'm Katie Saliba. PR Companies is a family of companies headquartered in Southeast Alabama. We're dedicated to helping businesses maximize their success through leveraging their human capital. Join us as we share our favorite staffing and HR strategies and help you drive business growth through your most valuable asset, your people.
Welcome to Peopling with Purpose. We're excited to welcome Dr. John Haymore with us today. He is an assistant professor at Troy University and has over 17 years of experience as an HR and safety consultant, where he provides training and guidance to organizations in various industries on how to prevent, prepare for, and address work-related trauma, violence, and other employee concerns.
On this episode, we cover why it's crucial to be proactive, not reactive, with workplace violence prevention, how to know the warning signs to prevent an incident, and the most effective ways to create a safe space so employees feel comfortable at work. Let's tune in. Hey, John, we appreciate you joining us today on the podcast.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Of course. So we have heard you speak a couple different times and they have just heard your bio, but you are obviously a professor at Troy University. And then you're an HR and safety consultant on the side, I know, and have your own business, but you are super passionate about workplace violence prevention. I just kind of want to jump right in and talk about the state of the world and how you got into that and why is that subject so important to the people that are listening? And can you kind of share of how you got into it and why it became such a passion project for you?
Sure. Yeah. Thanks again for having me. It's really great to be on your show. And I am really passionate about this topic because for a couple of reasons. I've got about 20 years of experience working in human resources and safety. And so I've seen firsthand in organizations that I've worked in, people that have been, that have encountered certain levels of violence. And so that, whether that be stalking or whether that may be a domestic violence issue that then moved into the workplace. And so being a human resource director for so many years before coming to teach at Troy, this was something that I kept seeing as an issue. And human resource professionals and management, really for that matter, we're really unsure of how to handle these situations and really what is workplace violence. That is probably the thing that really piqued my interest. Also, though, there's been an escalation in violence just in our society overall. So violence, victimization kind of took a dip in the early 2000s. But over the last 5 or 6 years, we've seen an increase and victimization rates. And so a couple of data points that I pulled for our discussion today, for example, workplace assaults resulted in over 57,000 injuries in 21 and 2022. A lot of people don't know that. According to the Bureau of Justice Statistics, victimization rates increased by almost 30% between 2021 and 2022. And then the FBI recently came out and reported an increase in hate crimes. And so just crime related to race, religion, political views, sexual orientation, there's been an uptick in the number of violent incidents that are happening and being reported. And so we can't really get away from it. That is being victimized or that risk being there in our personal lives and in the community. And of course, that also applies to our workplace. And so that really just drove my passion for trying to understand workplace violence better, really trying to understand the impact that it has on the individual, on the person that's being victimized, but also the witnesses, other coworkers and colleagues that we work with, and then also the organization as a whole, because there's, you know, huge impact that the business feels if they have an environment where certain types or levels of violence are being perpetrated.
Yeah. So every day we see it in the news, right? And couldn't agree with you more. There are so many more instances. It feels like somewhere in America, every single day, nearly, you know, there's something bad happening. And we're not doom and gloom kind of gals. We're really not. So this is a heavy subject for us to dive into. So I think one of the things that we wanted to start with is to kind of make the value proposition for our listeners of why it's important. So To do that, knowing that a lot of our listeners are leaders in organizations, tell us what the obligations for employers as it pertains to maintaining and creating a safe workplace are.
Yeah, great question. I'd like to kind of lead off that question by starting with what is workplace violence? A lot of times we associate workplace violence as the active shooter or some extreme incident that happens in the workplace, right? A bomb threat or something like that. But really, workplace violence starts with being uncivil, being rude to your coworkers, or being maybe cussed out by a customer at a hotel. And so it kind of level one of workplace violence starts in that incivility, rude behavior, and then escalates from there to bullying and threatening behavior, stalking, sabotage, and then leads to the more extreme incidents that we see, such as active shooter. But there are lots of, well, within OSHA, we have standards that govern, that really tell us what are the safety requirements within our industry, right? And so a lot of those revolve around making sure that we have the proper PPE and that we avoid any types of slips and trips and falls and that those types of safety regulations. But there's very little in terms of standards that have been written on a federal level that say you must provide a workplace that's free of any type of workplace violence. And so what we generally look at is the general duty clause within OSHA that says every organization must create a safe work environment for its employees. And so if a manager, for example, is aware that bullying is happening or that an employee is making threats or that someone's is at risk of encountering violence, it's really the responsibility of management of the organization to try to help prevent at all costs that incident from happening. So whether that be certain engineered controls that need to be put, badging systems that need to be included in the facility to make sure that you're keeping strangers from just walking into a facility and causing havoc, whether that might be the duty to warn someone. So maybe there's been some rumors or chatters that now you've been able to show, yeah, this person is actually maybe writing in a diary or posting on social media that they want to hurt someone at work or hurt the organization really has to take action toward that and warn potential employees that may be at risk. I've run into incidents where employees that no longer work with the organization are posting their desires to cause violence at the organization online. And so now the facility's got to make sure that it has some type of lockdown procedure and has to take action on locking down the facility to keep employees safe because this individual was en route to the organization. So really, it starts with the organization realizing that workplace violence is an issue, that it is likely happening in most organizations with any number of employees, and just really taking the necessary proactive steps to putting together a plan of action of let's try to avoid it at all costs. How do we prevent it? But if it does happen, then what do we need in place to be able to help us to overcome those risks? A couple of recent laws that are very interesting to me is that California recently passed a law, it's SB 553, that as of July 1st of 2024 will require all organizations in the state of California to have a workplace violence prevention program. And so that's soon to take effect. And that's going to probably set some type of precedent among other states that are looking to introduce legislation to keep employees safe. We've seen some laws at least introduced in Congress, but nothing that's really been passed at the federal level to protect healthcare workers, because healthcare is one of those industries that's really at a high level of risk of being of experiencing violence from patients and things like that. And so we've seen certain acts that have been introduced. But, you know, those are the two laws that really come to mind. We've also got to be mindful of any type of retaliation, harassment, discrimination. A lot of the laws that are covered within the EEOC that protects employees' rights, but also prevents anyone from retaliating against them or protects them from discrimination and harassment.
Yeah, I think as employers, I mean, just what you said, they can't turn the other cheek, you know, whether it is a spouse at home or whether it's in within their range to help right there or not. It's not turning the other cheek and pretending like you didn't see it. And a lot of the what you described as let's define it, like level one happens all the time, where people come in mad in our lobby and make threats or they're angry and de-escalating the situation. Some of the more extreme things are the ones that obviously make it in the news. But yeah, level one, I think, happens daily.
I think it's also worth noting that as you described the escalation of workplace violence, right, you described as it starts with just bad behavior, people being rude, and then it might escalate to acts of bullying. So a lot of the acts of bullying, if it's employee on employee, a lot of that behavior we know is protected through anti-harassment laws. And we know that employers already have an obligation to do that. But so often these sorts of things escalate and they include, as you mentioned, people that used to work here or maybe somebody's spouse. So it does really get tricky.
Which leads to my next question. What are some of the warning signs people should look for? Obviously, there's internal violence, there's external, there's lots of different factors and different categories that you would put that in. But what are some potential warning signs that employers should look for?
Well, that's a good point, right? That violence can really be perpetrated by strangers that have no relation to the company, by customers, clients, patients, people that you're serving, by coworkers, colleagues, subordinates, your boss, managers, and then also by domestic partners that, and we talked about that earlier, that spills over into the workplace. So the threat of violence can come from many different angles. The fifth one that we don't often talk about, but we saw on 9/11 was the threat of terrorist attack, which we don't always put into that group, but that's another one. Rarely does anyone go, if we're talking coworker or what we sometimes consider horizontal violence, this violence between colleagues, it rarely goes from zero to 100 overnight. There's a gradual progression toward becoming more and more violent. And so you'll often see severe mental distress, so high levels of frustration. A lot of times an individual feels that they are justified in acting out. Maybe they didn't receive a pay raise or a promotion, or they didn't get the performance feedback that they were wanting. And that typically adds on to other stressors that they have in their life, maybe financial stress at home, a relationship stress at home, stress with kids, things like that. And so all of that begins to compound until they take out their frustration on someone or the organization. We'll also see a lot of posting on social media. Many times there are posts that will hint or be direct threats of, if I don't get my way, I'm going to do something bad. We'll see a lack of self-care. So you may see, you know, severe alcohol and drug abuse. You may see people who are not sleeping, coming in late, maybe sharing a lot of their personal issues with you that are not normal for them to share. All of a sudden, now they're talking about all the things that are starting to just go wrong in their lives. That can be a big sign. Any type of reports of domestic abuse, domestic violence that's happening, either perpetrated toward them, or I've had cases where they've been in trouble, they being the perpetrator, with the law of domestic disputes happening at home. Also, there's a general unease among other coworkers and customers of this individual, like something just isn't right. I can't put my finger on it. I don't feel safe around this person. And so they're making threats, or I catch them stalking or following me, or I feel like I see them a lot out in public. And so all of these things could be signs. I think it's really important that as HR professionals or just managers in general, business owners, that we not diagnose, but that we look for the signs. And if things look out of order, that we take the steps to begin to address those.
Yeah. Better safe than sorry, right?
For sure.
So speaking of our business owners that are out there and the managers and leaders that are listening to us now, what are some things that company leaders can do to set up and implement a comprehensive workplace violence prevention program?
Great question. This is as important to me as having a detailed health and safety program or plan. I mean, you wouldn't think about walking into a manufacturing facility and saying, you know, what's your safety program? And them saying, well, we don't have one. OSHA standards dictates that they have safety protocols and health protocols. And we should take the same initiative and proactive steps of putting together a workplace violence prevention plan. So it really starts with defining the purpose of the program. You know, why is this important to us? And are there unique risks that we are watching out for? So I've worked, for example, with employers that are more of an office setting. They have really no manufacturing, no engineering, no real cause of concern for physical harm in the general safety sense. But they are maybe, you know, they have exposure to clients, customers, partners. And so having a workplace violence prevention program that talks about our core purpose, what are some of these threats, also putting together what we call a threat assessment team. And so these are individuals from around the organization. It's a mix of both executive leadership, supervisors, directors, human resources, maybe legal counsel and other employees that are trained on workplace violence, on what to look for, but also in case of an incident, what steps are we supposed to take? And then what is the recovery process after the incident? So who do we call? Who do we need to get involved? And so they're really taking notice of also doing normal safety audits, walking around the facility, making sure doors remain locked, outside lighting in the parking lot hasn't gone out, shrubs are cut down. I mean, these are very simple things that we don't often think about, but might just save someone's life or deter someone from loitering or causing some type of harm. You also want to, this workplace violence prevention program is going to really focus on employee training. So not just training the threat assessment team, but training all employees on how to report violence, any level of violence, whether that be sexual harassment, bullying, being cussed out by a customer or so on. And what are the steps once that is reported that the company or the team will take in investigating that incident? A lot of times people fear reporting an incident because of maybe fears of retaliation or they don't want to get someone in trouble. And so it just needs to be spelled out and employees need to know, well, what does that process look like? And that the company will do everything it can to try to keep it as confidential as possible.
Sure. I know a lot as HR directors, obviously, we have handbooks, we have training we do on anti-discrimination, anti-harassment. Where do you go when these things happen? Certainly, it is important to train the employees on that without freaking them out. But obviously, you want them to trust you as employers that you'll have their back. What about, is there any difference that you in training you do for leadership? Should that be different than just training the employees on workplace violent prevention?
The number one response that I get from employees on what they wish their managers or leaders would do when it comes to workplace violence is to create an environment where it was okay to talk about it. Mm. That is probably the number one point that everyone makes. I've interviewed a lot of people that have encountered all different levels of violence. And it was just, I wish there was a culture that we weren't afraid to talk about it. Yeah. And that I had somewhere to go that if something happened. And so you'll then maybe talk to a business owner or a senior leader that'll say, well, by bringing it up, it's going to cause a lot more issues. We're going to maybe shine a light on that violence is happening, or we're going to expose ourselves to some type of a liability issue that violence is happening. And it's actually, I think, works in reverse of that, is your employees want to be able to talk about it. And the more that you put it on the table and say, look, this is not tolerated. We have a program to help you. We will support you. We will investigate it. And it doesn't matter where you're at in this organization. If you're found participating in acts of violence, it won't, you know, you're gone. It won't be tolerated. And that has to be the message. That's the number one thing I hear from employees, is that I just want the support and that it's okay to bring it up.
I can see where a lot of employees would be fearful about bringing it forward, you know, especially if the perpetrator is maybe a customer or a client or a close vendor. And, you know, maybe they're new to the organization and they feel like that this person has a better relationship, you know, it is really significant to the overall success of the company they work for. So they're nervous to bring it up. And so I think that's an excellent point, that we want to make sure as employers that it's our responsibility, that our employees know that we need them to bring it up. And listen, it's not fun. You know, we've had in my 28-year career here, there's been a time or two where I've had to have very pointed conversations with customers where I said, you cannot speak to our team that way. And if you do, if you continue, we will not be able to work with you. And, you know, in most instances, people are just frustrated, and it was something that just happened one time. In our situation, we have never had a client threaten, you know, now applicants are different. We've had employees get angry. We fire people here. We're writing people up. I mean, we give somebody somewhere with just the sheer volume of people we're talking to every day, we're giving bad news all day long. And so we do train on this with our team. And, you know, we're still a relatively, I say we're a big, small company, right? We're privately held. Collectively, we have about $100 million in sales, but we have locally about 40 staff members. So we're not ginormous, but we do place a lot of emphasis on it. But I get it.
Yeah. But bare minimum, people should be able to trust their leaders, you know, whether that is the owner of the company, the person they report to. You know, the best thing you can do is have an open door policy where you can communicate, hey, this is going on. So I could see that being amazing.
If I may add, I think the best time for leaders that are listening to start their workplace violence is not after an incident happens, but right now, right? When everything is great and things are going well, now is the time to say, hey, look, we care about our employees. We care about you, your well-being, your mental health, your physical health. We're going to introduce a workplace violence prevention program now, not when something's been brought up and there's heightened levels of stress and anxiety around that issue. But before that happens, we're going to go ahead and roll this out. We're going to train employees. We're going to talk about the different types of violence that we may encounter. We're going to set up a reporting system so that you are comfortable in that if this does happen to you, that there are resources, there are people here that are going to support you. That makes it so much easier for somebody then 6 months down the road that does encounter something to say, hey, look, this actually has happened to me. Thank goodness you put something in place. Now I feel comfortable and confident to bring it to you. Rolling it out after it happens is still reactive, and you're still going to struggle with people feeling comfortable enough of bringing it up.
Yeah. And I think it's just the right thing to do.
Yeah,
you know? It is.
So next question. This is a big, big topic. So what role would you say that mental health support plays in preventing workplace violence? And how can companies ensure that they're providing adequate support?
Well, I think the mental health is paramount when you're talking about both the perpetrator looking for the signs of somebody who may be under mental distress and saying, okay, can we identify it early enough? And can we offer intervention or support to this employee before it escalates to that individual acting out? So there's that component. But then also there has to be mental health support for those that are facing or dealing with some type of violent incident at work, right? And so in today's world, and as HR professionals and business owners, we've got to really be aware that both types of individuals need it, that we've got to be good at identifying mental health issues or strains that people are going through. And what can we do during performance reviews and checkup meetings and maybe corporate forums to talk about those to kind of ease their fears of, you know, just because you didn't get this promotion doesn't mean that you're not a valuable employee, and kind of reiterating that, but then also offering those resources for individuals that are encountering it. And then also maybe providing the counselors for people to talk to. So a lot of times I'll hear maybe a business owner or HR director say, well, we offer an employee assistance program. And I think that that's great if it's being utilized and employees know what those services are and how to contact them. A lot of times I'll also talk to employees, though, that are not comfortable calling those numbers because they have no relationship with them. They don't know who they're calling. So sometimes it's better to maybe bring in a local counseling office and say, we've brought in counselors. You don't have to use them, but here's a resource for you in case you need it. If you're having issues, you know, at home with a domestic partner or a spouse, here's resources that we can't help you necessarily to get you out of that situation, but there are resources in the community that we've partnered with to offer, you know, that type of support for you. And so I think it's important, very important, that we talk about mental health, that we try to create a healthy work environment, that we provide resources for our employees to be able to talk to. But we also can't cross over into trying to diagnose someone or to try to...
Or to force them to tell us things
that they're not comfortable telling us. Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know we've had, obviously we have some, as Mary Beth said, we deliver bad news all day here, whether it's you didn't get the job, you're being let go, you know, you weren't selected, et cetera. And I've had some scary moments here, you know, in the 8 years I've been here where, hey, so-and-so has threatened, he might come up here. If you see this person, please alert us. You know, we have things in place, but we have been fortunate, Mary Beth's been here a lot longer, that nothing has ever transpired and happened in our lobby that would scare people to death. But obviously we do what we can to protect our people. There's panic buttons that, you know, we have things in place. But God forbid something did happen. And I mean, like we said, it's almost too late by the time it gets to that. But how do you, you know, assess the situation, I guess, after the aftermath of something like that? I know you said, you know, bring in counselors, but like first things first, I guess, assess just the state of the workforce and go from there.
I think so. I mean, if it's an incident where people are physically injured, I mean, number one is provide them medical attention, make sure that they're safe and out of harm's way, and of course, that yourself is cared for, right? That you've got the medical attention that everyone needs. And then also just understand that after the incident ends, the psychological impact of that may carry on a lot further than the physical impact. And so we hear a lot about PTSD or post-traumatic stress disorders, and a lot of times we associate that, and it is very true, with police officers or first responders or our military. And in cases they obviously are experiencing levels of PTSD, there are lots of people that are not in law enforcement, first responders, that also experience those types of disorders. And so understanding that that event may be considered a very traumatic event for some people and not for others. And so just being able to provide that long-term care and those resources so that they can rebuild their confidence and that they can feel supported in coming back to work and kind of getting back into what, you know, quote unquote, our normal routine. There's also something called incident debriefing. And so this is very soon after the incident happens. I mean, I'm talking within hours or the next day, bringing those that were involved or that have questions together. And this really should be done by someone who's trained in debriefing, but informally, just let's talk about what happened. Let's talk about how you're feeling about this, what resources you need, and just that meeting, everyone coming together, and maybe it takes a couple of hours to talk through some of those issues, can be very powerful in making and helping people feel better about the incident, that they are okay and that they can return back to work. But oftentimes an incident occurs and the facility is kind of put back into order, and then we come back to work and we just kind of move on as if nothing happened. And yet there are many people kind of silently living with the aftermath of this traumatic event, and we really need to keep them in mind of how do we care for them. The other things that I would consider is, how do we ensure organizational recovery in the case that we can't return back to our facility or we're shut down for a few days or a few weeks? So,
emergency plans.
Right. And so do we have, like any good emergency action plan, do we have plans in place that we can work offsite? People can work from home. They have access to different systems. If people need to take extended periods of time off, you know, how do we allow that? Of course, we would allow that, but how does that work out? And how do we communicate with employees if they're not in the office? Do we have some way of communicating with them that everyone, you know, some type of intranet that everybody has access to, or text message or whatever that might be? So we don't have time, I think, in our short call to be able to outline all of those, but you definitely want to have a plan for before, during, and after an incident may happen.
And creating a space where they can talk about it after, so it doesn't feel like it's been swept under the rug, you know?
Right.
Yes. Yeah. Funny you should say that about the texting platform. We do have an emergency action plan here, and we literally had a test of our app yesterday to make sure that everybody that was supposed to be on it is still on it and is getting it. And so we literally did that. So good job to our guy, Chris Atkins, out there keeping us safe here. We have a variety of employers that listen, John. So you've talked a lot about creating a safe space so employees feel comfortable talking about what's bothering them. You've talked about leaders and managers plugging in and kind of being aware of what's going on. You've talked about having a plan. You know, as we wrap up today, are there any other resources that you would recommend to our listeners that would help create a safe workplace?
Believe it or not, something that I have found fun and very effective is self-defense training. Mm-hmm. Corporate self-defense training has been something that's been very popular. I know that some very large organizations have implemented this, and it almost sounds counterintuitive when you're talking about workplace violence and then teaching your employees how to protect themselves.
But it's team building, you know, it's a little team building activity.
But I can't tell you how much it brings the team together.
Yeah.
It really provides just a whole another level of confidence for someone that, okay, I know what my limitations are, but I also know that I'm not a victim and that I can do something. God forbid that it should get to the point that I have to protect myself. And so establishing that confidence and getting them out of just sitting in front of a PowerPoint or a classroom lecture of training and getting them moving, there's so many benefits to it. I would also conduct a training on simple first aid. What happens if something does happen and you are the only one there? Do you know what's in your first aid kit? And do you know how to use it? And do you know how to keep someone alive for the 10 or 15 minutes it's going to take for EMT to get there? And, you know, a lot of times we just don't think about these things in the pressure and the, you know, in the moment of an incident happening, a workplace violence incident unfolding, people oftentimes panic or they freeze or they will, you know, they'll flee. And so you want employees that can assist and are willing to assist to be able to take action to try to keep themselves or other coworkers alive in the worst case scenario. But I think continual training, and it doesn't always have to be so involved or so deep, such a hard topic to talk about, but just starting the conversation. What is it? What might you encounter? What are some of the risks that our facility, based on our location or our industry, might encounter? And just having those conversations. Maybe they are periodic safety coffee talks that the manager or the team gets together and says, hey, we're going to discuss this topic today. You know, let's talk about what this might look like in our workplace. Can be very effective for bringing people together and giving them the confidence to talk about it and to address it. And the more people that know within the organization that it's being talked about and that there is a plan and that it's not going to be tolerated are a lot less likely to then engage in that type of behavior because they know that it's going to be called out and that action is going to be taken. So I think raising awareness is a very effective tool.
Well, thank you for that. I want to also give a shout out. We, in the last couple of years, have reached out to the Dothan PD and to the Houston County Sheriff's Department, have had various resources come out. And just for the listeners that don't know, usually your law enforcement offices are game to kind of come out and help you with that initiative. Didn't cost us anything. And they were super helpful. And, you know, an ounce of prevention, right? I think that's the whole key, is to try to get ahead of it and prepare in advance so that in the event that the worst case scenario happens, that you've got the best chance with the best possible outcome. So
that's right.
Woo, that was good stuff, but it was heavy, but it was necessary and it's important. And we thank you today, John, for being with us today, for sharing your information and your knowledge with our listeners. For everybody that would like to connect with Dr. John Haymore, his information is available in our show notes. And until the next time, thanks for tuning in to Peopling with Purpose.
Thank you for tuning in to Peopling with Purpose, a PR company's podcast. You can always get more information at PREmployerInc.com and PartnerWithExperts.com.
Be sure to like and follow us on social media, and you can find us everywhere you listen to podcasts. Until next time, happy peopling.